Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. Idea Talks is a monthly conversation with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. For more information on this podcast and others, visit joshtice.com.
Are you getting fired up and fueled up? There are a lot of conferences for pastors that give inspiration and motivation to fire you up about doing ministry. But as I travel around the country and talk with pastors, I find many pastors are motivated to their calling. What they are wanting is practical ideas to fuel that calling. What if there was a conference that could get you fired up and fueled up? I want to invite you to Idea Day, a day designed by pastors for pastors with one purpose, ideas. Pastor Josh Tice and his team at Southern Hills Baptist Church have created an experience that feels more like a conversation than a conference. At Idea Day, you will be invited to learn ideas from other pastors while contributing ideas that have worked well for your church. You will get and give practical ideas about leadership, financing for your church, taking the next step in church growth, even ideas for facilitating small groups that are effective. Don't miss this incredible day that will fire you up and fuel your ministry tank.
My wife, every single podcast, has encouraged each one of our listeners to rate and review the podcast.
Hey, wait a second. That's your wife?
That's my wife, Christina.
Oh, I thought you hired an actress.
Welcome to the Idea Talks.
Yeah.
Idea Talks is a...
You know I'm kidding. I knew that was her.
Yeah, I didn't know that was you. Okay. But as it turns out, we have a 5-star rating on this podcast.
Yeah, we do.
However...
5-star.
Only 43 reviews. And the data doesn't lie.
Yeah, the data doesn't lie.
There are more than 43 listeners to this podcast.
We have way more listeners from the reports we get than 43. And I'm wondering, hey guys, come on. Rate and review. All you have to do is give us 5 stars and review our podcast. And if you do, what we'll do is we'll give you a shout out. We don't even have to use your name. You can just put whatever alias you want on there. But we want to give you a shout out. So it's a win-win. We get in front of people's eyes. And that's what works, right? The more you rate and the more you review iTunes podcast, it kind of goes up in the algorithm and the more people can find our podcast.
Yeah.
In fact, it kind of, here's the deal. I've got another podcast called The Bible Talks with Josh and Heather. It's more of a marriage podcast. It's a theology podcast. It's more for laymen. And we have half the listeners on that podcast than we do here, but we have twice the amount of ratings and reviews. Right. And I'm like, hey, what's the deal with this audience, Drew?
Maybe they're just really quiet.
Maybe you're just quiet people.
Maybe they're just a bunch of dudes who don't like to comment on stuff.
Yeah, that might be true. We'll do it for us, and we would appreciate it.
Yeah.
I just plugged my other podcast. Why don't you plug your other podcast?
My podcast?
Yeah.
Totally irrelevant to this audience. It's called The Correspondence Podcast with my buddy John and I from Phoenix. We both work for the same company. He is technically a step ahead of me in the company. But we literally talk about like camera reviews, gear.
Dude, I watch your YouTube channel. I love your YouTube channel, but I gotta be honest. There are a couple times that I'm like, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. My wife listened to one of the most recent episodes. She goes, I don't know half the stuff you guys were saying, but it sounded really good.
I watch every single one.
Dedicated
because I want
follower.
To learn and I love
that.
You and you're amazing. So I'll watch every single one, but there are times where I'm like, okay, I don't think I'll understand the next couple minutes. So I'm going to skip.
Right.
And I'll skip. But a lot of times, like you did that one on Photoshop. Right. That was fascinating.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Did you watch this $10,000 photo one?
Yes, I did because that's clickbait, dude.
Yeah.
You did a YouTube clickbait. Video called the $10,000 photo.
Yeah. I spent $10,000 on one photo.
Yeah. So, I watched that whole thing.
That's pretty funny.
About halfway through, I'm like, oh, I get it.
But if you do leave your name under the comments,
yeah.
You're not, I mean, you're pretty much opening yourself to letting us haze you.
Yeah, because these are the ones that just came in. We had a few people rate and review our podcast just recently. We had CBK Nori. Who wrote 5-star, great podcast, show has quality content and conversation, always helpful and encouraging.
We had Real T. Phil say, always honest, helpful, and insight.
Hey, man, see, always, what was that?
Our podcast.
You're playing our podcast?
Yeah, I was just
what do? You play it every day to get our numbers up?
Yeah, like subliminally try to play it for audience, you know? All right.
All right. Yes. So thank you, Real T. Phil. And I like that he said always honest. You know what? That is something that we really strive to be.
Right.
So as we're doing something, we do, for example, today we're going to be talking about a few specific issues
right.
that what I don't want to do is hedge our answers based upon how people may perceive us. I want to be as honest as possible. Hey, that doesn't mean we're going to be right. We're probably wrong more than we are right. But I want to tell you what I'm really thinking. Drew wants to say what he's really thinking rather than what we perceive will be the best political outcome from what we have to say.
Right. And the last one is from our friend Jeremy Mendoza, or at least he's your friend, supposedly.
Okay, so Jeremy Mendoza definitely is a friend of mine. But this guy wrote a very strange comment. He writes 5 stars. This is a hall of great podcast. I don't know what that means.
This is a hall of great podcast.
This is a hall of great podcast.
I think he was trying to haze you a little bit because he says, every time I listen, I feel that it is the best 15 minutes of my sleep. I have one question though.
His username, that sounds like he's being messed up, man.
I know, because he's trying. At least he gives 5 stars, which doesn't count against the rating, which we appreciate.
And I love that he puts his real name.
Yeah. However, the username is gamer78572. So, like, is this guy a gamer?
Look, I know him. He's a friend of mine. Uh-huh. The idea that he's a gamer blows my mind.
Got it.
So, gamer78572. Dude, Mendoza. Bro, I'm going to talk to your 3 brothers because I know your 3 brothers. They're friends of mine too. And my question is, what is this review? He literally writes, I love that this podcast that is at least above average.
Maybe we're going to assume way positive intent here. And he's like Siri dictating it as he's driving on the road, right? Taking a phone call, like, you know, thanks for at least reviewing.
So what we'd like you to do is rate and review our podcast like Jeremy. more like real T-Phil or CBK Nori.
Cool. Yeah. So we got some questions that came in, and I think these are always fun for audience because they get your perspective going back to the theme of honesty and transparency.
And we don't always read every question that comes in, but these are ones that we think, oh, you know, our audience might like the answers, some of this dialogue, so we use it.
And I've reviewed these ahead of time. I don't always. I know that's surprising, but I'm going to try to, you know, give my perspective as a lay person who's not on staff, not pastoring a church of, you know, thousands of people as well. And hopefully I can help, you know, give some value as well. That's the goal.
I think you absolutely can. All right, let's get into it. Here's the question. Do you want me to read or you?
I'll get it. So it says, I feel like I'm a double-minded man that's unstable in all his ways. I have friends that are Calvinist, post-trib, camp meeting, Bob Jones, Hiles, non-denominational. And just the way he even phrases this question.
Right.
Yeah. Makes it sound like he's from a particular audience. Like if I read this to a guy off the street, he'd be like, what? I don't understand.
Is that? Yeah.
Anyway, before our audience, I think most people know what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
When I sit with them and they are pouring out their case on a particular passion point, I see their point. But I can sit with a totally opposite position the next day and see their point too. So at the end of the day, I'm not sure where I came and can't come down on any of it.
Okay. Look, guy. I'm with you, man. I get it. I don't judge this at all in the sense of like, what are you thinking, man? You better stand for truth. There are, first of all, a few things. Number one, there are great arguments on all sides for a lot of specific issues. Absolutely. This is why, to me, I so heavily relate with the historic fundamentalists of the early 20th centuries. These were my dudes. I was totally born out of the wrong century. I loved going back and reading the original fundamentalists. And why? Because they were able to clearly state, here are the most important elements of orthodoxy. Here are the most fundamental truths of Scripture. We must agree on these things. If you don't agree on these things, I will have nothing to do with you in regards to ecclesiastical separation and ecclesiastical community. You are not allowed to be a member of our church. You are not allowed to work with us in ministry on these topics, unless we agree on these topics. Outside of those fundamentals of the faith, there is room for discussion on a lot of issues. Now, I will say, the longer you are in ministry, and I don't know how old this individual is, the longer you are in ministry, the more you need to begin coming down with decisions on certain, on all of these as you go forward. I'm 15 years into my senior pastorate ministry. I'll be 39 years old when this episode airs. I'll walk through this specific question and talk about these specific issues. when I sit down with my Calvinist friends, I am not a Calvinist. I'm not reformed in my theology. But when I sit down, I love to talk about Calvinism, Arminianism. I like to talk about the predestination of Christ, the sovereignty of God, the free will. And these are great conversations. But at this point in my life, it's not like I'm battling, boy, I don't know where I am. I already decided where I'm at. I know what I believe. Now, I'm of the persuasion that I don't have to necessarily separate or call somebody a heretic who's a Calvinist. I don't think Charles Spurgeon was a Calvinist. I mean, was a heretic, I should say, though he was a Calvinist. Their arguments, though persuasive and interesting, are not persuading me at this point. I know what I believe, and I've made my decision. I know where I'm going to stand on these specific issues. Things like pre-trib, post-trib, camp meeting, music styles, all of these kind of things. I think you have to get to a point where you're able to decide, okay, there are good arguments on both sides. Which argument do I find to be most persuasively biblical? I see the scripture teaches this, so therefore I'm going to decide to believe this. It doesn't mean you become closed-minded on all issues, because there might be certain elements that you're still interested in studying deeper and to understand in a more open way. But there are certain doctrines that are fundamental, and then the more you study, I think those dark places become more clear and clearer for you as you move forward.
You know, when I read over this question, I think the first thing that hit me was, I think it's awesome that they have friends that have differing viewpoints.
You're exactly right. That's a great point.
If they only have friends that are saying the exact same thing they are, you probably have some weak, you know, circle of friends, to be honest.
Yeah.
So
no one ought to live in an echo chamber.
Yeah. If nobody around you, even in your non-immediate circle, is not challenging your beliefs on something.
Yeah.
And they're agreeing with you on everything, that's a kind of sad place to be in. So that was the first thought I had. The second thing I think about the awesomeness that we have is individual soul liberty. And the fact is we don't live in a dictatorship. We don't live in, you know, an Anglican church era where we have to abide by a certain religious standpoint or whatever, otherwise we'll be persecuted. But the fact is, like, you get to decide.
Yeah.
The last thing I thought of was something that you've said on this podcast before. If you're truly unsettled on a belief or something that you think you're wavering in, and something that, you know, a conviction that you have, whatever it is, one of these things that he listed here, write a thousand word paper on it.
Right. Yeah.
And if you're still undecided after that, it'd be surprising.
Yeah. Drew, that's great. I would say even precursor that by one step. And that would say one of my favorite series of books has been the Counterpoints series. Let's say on the spirit gifts, or let's say on church government, or whatever. Church government is a great example. Plurality of elders, single elder led, presbytery model, whatever it might be that you're interested in. There are good arguments. I think the reason why many young independent Baptists and Southern Baptists struggle with understanding where they're at in their 30s is because they were taught in their early 20s, there's only one perspective on this that makes sense. And so then I don't know why these people would even consider that other possibility. That's insanity. It doesn't even make sense. Then they actually begin to hear that perspective and they realize, oh, there is a logical biblical support for this perspective, and then they get all confused. I thought it was just hoo-ha. I just thought it was ridiculous. Now there's actual perspective why this might be. So I don't think we've given enough due. That's why I like the Counterpoint series. The Counterpoint series writes about a specific issue from every viewpoint, and it's by multiple authors, so that by the time you're done reading it, you are understanding fully from somebody else's point of view, but you're more solidified in your point of view. You respect somebody else's point of view and know how to disagree with them. And so I would say, number one, read maybe Counterpoints on those very issues. I don't think you have to spend days and months and years reading everything on everybody's. Read a good book like Counterpoints, and then, like you said, write a paper that expresses your position and be done with it.
The last thing I'll say here is just, you know, you don't always have to ostracize somebody who's in an opposing belief as you.
That's a great way to say it.
Again, like, you know, if you have friends of a different, that maybe believe whatever it is, they're non-denominational, or they believe in, you know, post-tribulation rapture, what have you, doesn't mean you have to ostracize them because they believe something differently.
Agreed.
So the next question here, I was raised in this area. These people are uneducated. It's interesting. These people are uneducated, drug addicted, unorganized, no dedication or commitment. Hesitate to follow, sitting on the fence, satisfied with the government taking care of them, no vision for the future type of people. God has really convicted me of recently of two things. I think I am better than they are, which is number one. And the second thing is I don't like them sometimes. More often.
Talk about honesty.
Just frustrated.
Yeah, yeah.
How do I lead people I'm frustrated with? I feel bad just writing this.
Look, hey man, I sometimes think there's a little too much shame in sharing our honest feelings. Obviously, this is why I'm not reading names or anything like that, because this man's opening up. He's sharing what he's truly feeling. And I value authenticity and honesty tremendously. I know so do you, Drew, and that's one of the core values of our church. So thank you for an honest question. Secondly,
there's probably a lot of other people out there that are thinking this,
yeah.
But to your point, are just not willing to say it either.
Yeah. There's a few things I want to say. Number one, I do think that you're sensing a little bit of embarrassment and shame because you're sensing the pride that's in your heart. And so, yeah, for you to view yourself as a better person is wrong. You're not. And I think that's why you're feeling bad just writing this. And the reason you're frustrated with yourself as well as them is because there is a sense of superiority. You're developing the same spirit that maybe Jesuit priest who has arrived on a mission field somewhere looking down at the natives, or more rightly so, a Pharisee looking down on the Galileans. All of that is totally inappropriate. And I think you know that. And I know that. We all know that. So what ought be done is a contrite heart before the Lord. I'm not preaching at you. I'm trying to help. But I would say, secondly, when you're able to eradicate the pride out of it and then analyze it without shame and say, okay, God, I'm no better than anybody, but do I fit in this culture? Maybe, God, you placed me here and I was raised here, but maybe honestly, maybe it looks like I fit maybe in a different cultural setting. Maybe this culture is a little bit more, a little different than the way I think, a little different than the way I do ministry, a little different than the way I act, a little different than the way my family is. And with that, I think that's just wisdom of knowing where you might fit on God's broader kingdom or God's global impact. So I think it's twofold, man. We talked about honesty. I got to be honest. I think the reason you feel badly writing this is because you're struggling with some pride in that. No problem, because I struggle with pride every day. confess it and get that. But then I think you have to be honest with yourself and then say, hey, mm-hmm. I need to find a place that I fit better.
Yeah.
What do you think, Drew?
Two thoughts. One's, you know, more on the positive side. One's kind of more reality. The first one I would say is, you know, some people that are listening to this podcast right now, and after reading the description of uneducated, drug addicted, unorganized, no dedication, your minds naturally went to the downtown community of whatever, you know, slums and that kind of stuff. But to be frank, like, there is a very rich community here in Las Vegas and Summerlin where I could probably find these same sort of people that meet these same criteria.
That's a good point.
And live in multi-million dollar houses.
Right.
So that's the first thing.
Or you could go to an agricultural society and find a lot of these. That's a great point. Yeah. So, you know what? I'm viewing something and you're viewing something, and maybe every listener is viewing something completely different based upon our preconceptions of what that community might look like.
Right.
Great point.
The second thing is I want to be filled with grace here, but at the exact same time, I want to say, like, welcome to leadership. If everybody that you're leading loves you all the time, that's not like leadership. That's like a cult.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, the most challenging moments I've had as a leader in my organization is when people don't love you, that you have to make a stand for something that's not popular. And even now in the middle of something that I'm going through something that I don't agree with, an organizational aspect that I have to lead. But that's leadership.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So if every single person you're always happy-go-lucky with and 100% of the people you love at all times, like, I don't think that's realistic.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think that's right. I heard a sermon at a conference one time called How Can I Build a Church with These People? And I just thought it was hilarious because it's so true. A pastor will often think that. And I think, I'm not sure that the point of his sermon was now look in the mirror and say, how in the world could God build a church with that person? Mm-hmm. And realize, oh man, I'm as screwed up as everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of benefit in that. But let me just say, the person, whoever, and I don't remember who it was because we took these notes so long ago, whoever wrote this, I want to commend you for your honesty and reaching out with vulnerability and saying, hey, this is what I'm actually feeling, because you probably expressed what a lot of people are feeling.
Yeah.
And we were able to address it that way.
Next up, because of the mentality of the people I serve, I find that when I take my hands off of a ministry, it dies. How do you develop a dedicated volunteer staff?
Oh, this is one of the most difficult things for a church planter slash pastor of a small church who's building is to get to the point where you realize I can't do everything, mm-hmm. even though I'm the best at everything. And that's so terrible, right? To admit that you actually think that way.
Right.
But the reality is we are, in a small church ministry, often the best person at something because we've been trained.
Right.
And I'll tell you a couple things. Number one, it takes trust. Mm-hmm. I'm going to trust this person with this. Number two, it takes humility. They might end up doing it better than I will long term. Mm-hmm. And then it takes hard work. And this is what I really think the first two are easier compared to the last one. Hard work is training them. Training is not easy. Taking one person saying, this is what you do. Nope, this is how to do it. Nope, this is how to do it. Nope, this is how to do it. Over and over and over. Mm-hmm. I think is one of the great things that we fail in.
Yeah, I'll throw in a quote and a thought here. The quote is, the true test of leadership is what it looks like in your absence. There is a reason why the phrase, when the rat's away, the mice play. The fact is, this is a biblical pattern, right? So like Moses led people and then he left for a periodic time. Jesus led his disciples and he left for a period of time to pray, right?
That's so a great point.
When we as leaders lead something and we truly test that because we notice people are following us in a direction, what happens in our absence is the true test of how well we're leading. You can think about delegation here, how much training did the people need that we're serving? And that's really the thought that I have behind this, is the fact that if you take your hands off of the ministry and you're the one leading it, you probably didn't train the people underneath you well enough to take over.
Well, he says over and over, how do you develop a dedicated volunteer staff? And I think that really is it. Dedicated volunteer staffs are very good if they're very well trained.
Yep.
And so I think I would much rather have one volunteer that's been very well trained than 10 volunteers who don't know what they're doing. And by the way, this is one of the main topics that's constantly brought up in our idea events, idea nights, idea days, idea summit. How do we train volunteers appropriately? Because even a church of 250 is likely to only have 2, maybe 3 staff members. You cannot do everything. A church at any level is reliant upon the wisdom and the work ethic and the ability of your volunteers.
Yeah, Blake gives a talk at the Idea Day about first time to fully engaged member, and he talks about our guest services team. And the whole concept behind that talk is, to your point, developing volunteer staff is making them feel empowered to own it.
Yes.
So it's not all about you as the leader. Sometimes, and this is hard. I've had to learn this over my leadership career. Sometimes when you're growing up, whether it's in college or what have you, you're graded on your success by how well of an individual contributor you are. In other words, your own individual contribution to the greater organization. Mm. But once you get to a certain level of leadership, now the success is not determined by you as a performer individually, about how well the people underneath you you're serving. That's your true test of success. So that is what we hopefully are developing as leadership. The higher we grow in an organization is not, we're gauging our own, like, how did I do today?
Yeah.
It's no, like, how did the 5 people I'm serving, how did they do today? How did they grow? How did they get better?
You know, it's so interesting you said that. Michael Drew obviously serves as one of our deacons. I mention that all the time. But Michael McConnell serves as our deacon chair at Southern Hills. And Michael said this to me, probably, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago. Anyway, he said to me, he said, the thing that I'm so pleased with this year was not in the sermons you preached and the things that you did, but I was so pleased in how you led the staff through several transitions. And he talked specifically about Jason and Fred and our senior leadership team. And I really took note of that. I thought, man, that's interesting. It goes exactly to what you're saying. It's not on the tasks that I accomplish. It's upon the leadership that I provide the senior leaders in the church. And that's something that I'm trying to learn even now.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we all got to deal with. A great article I read recently was talking about a guy named Bill Campbell who served as a coach to a lot of Silicon Valley executives. And this guy was trying to reach out to him for an article for a book, and he literally wouldn't take his interview. But Bill Kimball was known over and over and over again for making people that he was serving better than himself. He was selfless in his leadership, and he cared about their, you know, success and their forward momentum more than his own.
Yeah.
And I thought about, you know, servant leadership and how that's how we should hopefully be, even in a church environment, be leading people on a daily basis.
So the simple answer from my point of view would be training and appreciation. We don't have time to get into that, but constantly show appreciation, because you cannot pay them anything.
Yeah.
You can pay them through appreciation.
And the thing that I would say here is plan periodic times away on purpose.
Mm.
So like if you're trying to guess like how good your leadership
That's
is,
great thought.
Plan a weekend away at another church and see how they did without you.
Agreed.
Next question. So super real struggle for our young church. We have a mother with a 10-month-old and 6-year-old who won't make her 6-year-old go to the kids ministry and release the infant to nursery, even though the grandma is in the nursery.
Yeah.
Pastor has noticed the mom who is a young Christian isn't growing because she isn't able to focus. And the babies are cute and distracting others. Any suggestions?
Yeah. The struggle is real, guy. We've been there. We are there. Our third service is so packed.
I mean, my kids babies. Are cute. So I mean,
well, your kids are allowed. If all the kids were like your kids,
he has to say that. Wah, wah, wah.
but it's true, actually. No, our third service is so filled with babies and kids, and that's going to be truer of two kinds of people. Number one, people who have been trained that they must keep their children in church, or that it's better, or you're better parent for doing so, a better Christian, or for those who are newer to Christianity, and they're just nervous about putting their children in a strange location. So it really has to do with two things, announcing and talking about how great the nurseries and the children's ministries are. And then what we've done is we've created brochures that we can hand people that specifically, so it's a very passive way, non-aggressive way to say, and the brochure says, hey, you may not be aware of an amazing place called the Southern Hills Nursery. Mm-hmm. And then it talks about how wonderful it is and shows beautiful photographs. And so ushers are trained to give these to those people whenever they see a baby crying. Like as the baby cries, they walk up and say, hey, look at, no, that's not what they do. But as they see people bringing in children or whatever, they're able to get a brochure that talks about how great it is. So it's a non-confrontational gracious way of doing that. So I would say in this specific scenario, these people seem to already come to the church. It may just be a matter of a conversation. I will say this. Don't, and I've said this many times on this podcast, don't preach a sermon where a conversation is needed.
It's good.
And a lot of times that does take place. We get really nervous. Even me, especially people like me, I'm not a big confrontational person. Instead of confronting an issue with one person that really only needs to be talked to about with one person, we want to say, hey, I'm going to preach this from the pulpit. Maybe they'll pick it up. Well, why waste 99 people's time when there's only one person that really needs this information? Just love them. Say, hey, I just want to talk to you about it. And if you can be positive and control your emotions, but be direct, be an aggressive, direct leader, you might be able to walk through this.
I'm curious your perspective, but like I've had moments as leader where like I've seen a problem and I'm like, should I say something? Because I'm afraid to have the conversation.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, maybe just over time it'll get better.
It never gets better.
And then like a week later, it's like, it's not only got worse, it's like multiplied. And it's like so much worse.
Well, eventually it will get better. In about 20 years, that 10-month-old will be 20. The 6-year-old will be 26. The problem is that they will have influenced others to keep their children in there as well. So
yeah. My kind of admonishment here is just, you know, some like don't be afraid to have the conversation and ask an honest question, but do it intelligently. Yeah. So like, is there anything wrong with going up to the mother if you have a good relationship with her and be like, hey, I want to make sure you get the most out of these services. What would it take for you to get your kids in the nursery? I'm just curious.
I think that's a great way to do it too, because you're not necessarily saying, hey, what's best for the rest of us? And they're saying, look, for your sake, we want what's best for your sake.
Right.
And there's one last thing before we move on. And that is, we have been talking about this as a staff as well, Jason, Fred, and I, and we've been strategically listening to churches all over America and their sermons waiting for baby cries. We literally have done this last year because we want to know if this is a, and the answer is from Joel Osteen to name whoever, we've listened to theirs, and you will always hear babies in the background screaming. And so the reason I say that is this, is it's a universal, at least American church issue. And it is what it is. It's not always easy to ignore it. It's not always easy to get by it. But I think what you're struggling with, we're all struggling with.
So this next question is a little bit lengthy in its read, and I'll try to do my best to make it brief.
Okay, this was an email interaction that I had, so I have some answers here. And then he has some replies. We went back and forth.
Hey, Brother Josh, I wanted to know your opinion on music. I have a cousin who just recently got saved, and where he lives is at the Hood. He's asking me if it's okay to listen to Christian rap music, but I told him I didn't really know what to say and suggested that he listen to things like K-Love or contemporary Christian music. I was thinking, where does a Christian cross the line when it comes to music? And I asked my assistant pastor one time. He told me that bluegrass is the definition of what Christian music should be, but nowhere in the Bible does it say that.
Hold on. Just let's keep going. Wait, hold on. Literally, he said, yes, the definition of Christian music is bluegrass. Okay.
I can't wait to unpack this with you.
That's not a cultural statement. That's definitely a biblical statement.
That's it. I know my cousin would never listen to bluegrass, but I want to tell him of some good music that would help him grow as a Christian.
Oh my gosh.
How would you go about the situation? Should I let God work on him and let him figure it out on his own? Because he has said that music I listen to is the white people music again.
Yeah.
How should I go about this? I'd appreciate your feedback.
Okay, so first of all, the more the Holy Spirit works on him and he grows and progressively sanctifies, he's going to come to realization that bluegrass is Christian music. That's natural. I'm not teasing the man who sent this in. I'm ridiculing the ridiculous nature of what we call ethnocentrism. Ethnocentrism is the idea that the way I grew up and what I've experienced in life is the center of human existence.
Ethnocentrism. And the pinnacle of existence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, is the center of human existence and the summit of human existence. So if all the world would be able to mature to the point where they understood what I understood in my culture in Kentucky, or, and I'm not trying to make fun of Kentuckians, but here we're talking about bluegrass, or my culture of Vienna, or my culture of Uganda, when everybody can get to, or my culture of Chihuahua, when everybody can understand that I am the center of all the ethnicity, and the height, and the Aryan race is the height of all nations who had ever been, then we'll have revival.
You know, it sounds familiar. I'm trying to remember a story in history that actually aligns so much with what you're saying right now.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. It's Hitler.
Right. We didn't go too far, right, by calling that. Look. I didn't respond in any of that. I simply responded in my email. What did I respond?
Give him Lecrae.
I responded with three words because I didn't know this person. And I don't remember this interaction because we take notes. We get a lot of emails and then I'll take notes and I'll forward those for the notes podcast. But I emailed three words back, give him Lecrae. Lecrae, for those who aren't familiar, is a Christian artist who's a Christian rapper. Then now his response. And again, I am not mocking this question. The reason he has these questions is because the godly people in his life are making statements like Christian music is bluegrass music, which he correctly identified as a non-biblical statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's ethnocentric. It is ethnocentric. That's as far as I'll go.
Okay.
You called it Hitler. I'll say it's ethnocentric.
Yeah.
It's a misunderstanding and a misperception of the value of my culture above all other cultures because my culture is essentially of God and everybody else's is not.
Yeah. From my perspective, you know, you're talking to a guy who was trained classically on how to sing opera growing up. I view all these questions about music or Christian music from a quality standpoint, not necessarily standard standpoint.
Yeah.
And the quality of bluegrass music compared to something like Pavarotti or, dare I say, Jay-Z, is on a completely different quality plane.
Now, see, that's where you and I might disagree a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, because I like bluegrass music. It depends on what you mean by, because there's a guy, you know, the actor Steve Martin?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard his bluegrass band?
No.
You want to talk about quality?
Sure.
Download that on your device. Literally, the quality is incredible. So for me, it's not a matter of quality; it's a matter of culture.
Right.
So here's an individual that says, "I love." Look, I was just preaching down in the Rio Grande Valley. And we went to a restaurant, amazing restaurant, Mexican restaurant, and they had a mariachi band. Incredible mariachi band. I mean, the quality was top tier.
But they're playing the same three chords over and over again.
What do you mean?
Oh, exactly.
Well, you're okay. Well, good point. Okay, you're talking about as somebody who loves classical
sure,
music.
Yeah.
You're a snob. You're a snob.
I know.
That's all I want to say.
Yeah, that's okay.
All right. Well, at least our audience saw us disagree.
Yeah.
Because we always agree.
For sure.
Regardless, culture, culture, culture.
Yeah.
I said, give him Lecrae. This was his response.
I was told that I shouldn't encourage anyone else to listen to that music. I guess referring to Lecrae. We were talking about earlier because if people in my neighborhood see me or another brother in Christ listening to a certain music that sounds worldly, whatever that means, that lost people will think, hey, that Christian is listening to music that sounds like my music, and they'll start to think, I'm good. I don't need that Jesus he has because he listens to that kind of music that I use to listen to. Pretty much, I was told that I would be hurting the cause of Christ more than I would be helping. And what would be your opinion on that?
Okay, so I'm so glad this brother would ask this question.
Yeah.
Because this is the argument that has been given over and over and over in many circles. I can't listen to that kind of music. If I roll down my windows and the car next to me hears me listening to that kind of music, they will look over and say, oh, I thought he was a Christian. What kind of a Christian would listen to that kind of music? I don't need Jesus. And I have to stop and ask the audience to ask themselves this question. What? No, seriously. Really? Like, really? Really? Somebody, see, this is just mind-boggling. If you do not know unbelievers, please go meet an unbeliever and talk to them, not just at the door where you pray with them and then never talk to them again. Go and become friends with an unbeliever. Unbelievers don't think that. Really, somebody who's never been to church, an unbeliever, an unchurched person, is going to hear your music in a car and think, that guy's a Christian, and he's listening to music that sounds like my music. Therefore, so this was my response. Does that argument sound reasonable to you? And I'm not making, again, you need to understand, I love this brother who emailed this to me. I don't remember who it was, but I love you. I'm for you. But this is ridiculous information. This is what I wrote back. Does that argument sound reasonable to you? If your unsaved neighbor asked your opinion on the latest Avengers movie, and you told him you saw it and loved it, do you think he's less likely to come to Christ because he knows that you watched the same movie as he did? He says to you, hey, yeah, did you see that Avengers movie? Yeah, I saw it. I loved it. Wait a second. I just remembered. You're a Christian. You saw an Avengers movie? Oh, what does your Jesus have to offer me? It's not logical, rational. It's like we have no concept of the way unsaved people actually think. I said to him, I used to hear the exact same thing all the time, and I actually repeated these thoughts many times myself. And that's why you say, Josh, you seem to grow really frustrated. Here's why. Because I'm not just frustrated with this line of thinking. I'm frustrated and embarrassed that I used to project it. I used to say this kind of thing. Not even as a young punk in college. I used to preach from the pulpit of our church these kind of things, and I'm embarrassed by it because it's, unfortunately, this argument is neither logical nor biblical. What are your thoughts?
It's tough, you know. I think while we want to be the very word blameless in the Bible talks about, but he's again referring to a minister in that sense, that word, like if you look up the definition, talks about without handles. The idea is that, like, at any time, a minister of God's supposed to be blameless, meaning there's nothing that somebody can grab a hold of and accuse you of something and drag you around, right?
Yeah, for the cause
of Christ. But at the exact same time, like, there is a ludicrousy to this thought as far as, like, again, they don't care.
Right.
They're assuming that the people of the world will judge them as much as a Christian would. And that's the sad part of this question is the fact that, like, the only people judging you on your music are other Christians.
Right, right.
Not lost people.
Precisely. Now, are they going to judge you if you're a pornographer? Yes. Yeah. As a minister of the gospel, you shouldn't be a pornographer.
Yeah.
Are they going to judge you if you're sleeping around on your wife, if you're beating your children,
right.
if you're stealing money from the coffers? All of these things are understood to be deplorable. But the fact that you went to a movie or you're listening to a song that sounds like their music, it's just illogical. So he responded to that email by saying,
someone asked me yesterday saying, would Jesus listen to that music or would Jesus watch that movie or Jesus play that video game? And I told them, no, I don't believe he would, but I don't believe Jesus would do a lot of what any Christian does because he's perfect and we're not. When I picture Jesus, I can't imagine how he would live in the current world today.
Yeah, and see, this is where I do think we do need to understand not only the deity of Christ, but the humanity of Christ. Jesus lived like as we are, yet without sin. And he wasn't just tempted at all points like as we are. The Bible is very clear on describing the humanity of Jesus. So let's talk about Jesus in the modern day. Would Jesus watch a football game? Well, yes. Yes, he would. Now, by the way, if you say no, he wouldn't, then I want to encourage every single listener to only do what Jesus would do. Don't watch football games. Of course Jesus would watch a football game. Would Jesus go to Disneyland? Would Jesus drive around looking at Christmas lights with children? Yes, he would. He would even attend weddings. He would attend dinner parties. He would go hiking. In fact, he did all of those things in the Bible. He participated in social events of his day. In fact, it was the hypocritical religious leaders of his day that got angry with him for doing just these things, calling him a wine bibber and a man who hung out with wicked people. You see, religious hypocrites and legalists have always been around. And if Jesus was around today, these same people would be pointing to Jesus and they'd be like, would God really want you to be going to this tax collector's dinner? This dinner party, would God really want you to go to this wedding where you're not only making wine, but you're serving wine? Would God really want you to? And Jesus would be like, guys, I am God. The point being, don't get sidetracked on the wine issue. If you want us to talk about that someday, we will. I don't drink, neither does Drew. But here's the point. Jesus would have lived the normal cultural life, but he would not have participated in the sin. And I think the Christian has to do the same. The Christian has to live the normal cultural life. If you say, no, we shouldn't, then buy in to the philosophy of what the Amish are doing, because right. they're doing it far better than you are.
Yeah.
If the concept, if the goal is the contest, if the goal of the contest is to be most separated from the world, then the Amish are beating the Independent Baptists. So if that's the goal, then go for gold. Don't sure. settle for silver.
Yeah.
But if the goal is to reach people with the gospel of Christ by being in the world, but not of the world in their sin, as the book of 1 John alludes to, then do just that. And in regards to the Christian rap music, look, man, I'd stand beside much of the theology of Lecrae far more than a lot of Christian contemporary artists, even though I would rather, personally, I enjoy Christian contemporary music, but the theology of Lecrae and the poetry of Lecrae is incredible.
Yeah,
and honestly, there's a big pushback on Christian rap music far more than others, and I'll leave it to your own judgment of why you think there might be more pushback on Christian rap more than there might be Christian country music. You answer that question. I won't even allude to maybe why. You in your own mind answer the question, why are there far more Christians in America that would fine with Christian country music and not Christian rap?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, you know, whoever he's getting advice from, you know, likened his, you know, whatever the standard is back to what would Jesus do, right? So like WWJD, which would probably be the same thing as the people that he says, okay, so if I can grow my hair out long and have a beard, they probably say, well, no, that's wrong.
Right.
Because that's a cultural idiosyncrasy that they don't believe in.
Very interesting.
I think it's really interesting how they justify some attributes of God without, you know, ascribing to Christ's characteristics first. But yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, Christ, if he were alive today, would be with the people. And that's because his goal was to seek and to save that which was lost.
And as he was with those people, who would be the ones who would critique and criticize him the most?
Yeah.
The religious legalists of the day.
Right. Who add anything but grace to salvation.
Yeah. And yes, 100%. So, ooh, boy, those will be interesting things for people to hear. And,
yeah.
And, I hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did. Hey, I do want to just be honest here. If I come across a little bit, more confrontational and irritated by this, I'm not, again, irritated in the slightest with the questions. It's simply, for those who don't know, I know our audience is broadening. For those who don't know, we do come from a very conservative background. And for those who don't know that, I've dealt with these questions so often and the judgmental spirit that does come along with it that I begin to, and this is a problem in my heart, I begin to lack the patience with them that I offer freely to those who have not known Christ. And I genuinely do need to be more patient with those, not who are just coming to truth like these dear brothers, but even with those who are, as I did for many years, perpetrating mistruths that I have just been taught, repeating things in sermons that I repeated because somebody else repeated that somebody else repeated. And I think I grow frustrated too quickly with them, and I need to patiently love them like I ought. I don't know. What about you, Drew?
Yeah, I think you're a little closer to Christ than I am, so probably more filled with grace. Yeah. So I'm pardon my sarcasm in some of these responses, but you know, I think you deal with a lot of varied issues that maybe even some pastors don't do across the globe because of the location in which you serve Christ.
Yeah,
and it never ceases to amaze me, you know, how when somebody brings up something to you, you're like, oh yeah, I've totally heard that before. And it could be the most random, you know, thing.
Yeah.
But because you're serving Christ here in Las Vegas, like you might have some exposure to some of these cultural things that other people don't.
Well, man, look, I've enjoyed this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. Hey, if you have not signed up for the upcoming Idea Day regional event, which is coming up here in the West, you ought to, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. Idea Day West, it's coming up here in January. Go on to the Idea Network website and check it out. And we'd love to host you in Vegas. It's going to be an amazing event coming up here in January.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.